Thank you, Irene. I'm Mary Canales, and I am going to be doing the first paper. The three first papers are connected and part of a work that we have been and developing and presenting and publishing around for the past 10 years. So they are all connected. I do want to disclose, I don't have any financial disclosures, but I do have to leave early. I have another presentation across the hall. And so I don't want you to think I'm just ditching out on my colleagues, but I do have to scoot over and follow up with a second presentation. So I hope that isn't a problem. So it's kind of an overview of what I'm going to talk about first this morning, and looking at issues related to othering, something that I have been thinking about since the mid-90s. So justice. Nursing and public health nursing is replete with imperatives that urge us to care and be caring and deliver that care in a socially just and humane manner. Yet the enactment of such care is often challenging and difficult. Justice, as a principle, speaks to differences inherent among people and acknowledges that these differences frame how we engage and implement justice. How justice is enacted depends on how the other is constructed, from whose perspective, and under what conditions or context the other is known. I propose that the theoretical framework of othering is well suited for examining the relationship between justice and care. Integration of this framework into nursing has the potential to move the profession beyond calls to act in ways that are socially just to identifying specific approaches for enacting socially just care. Othering is conceptualized as two interrelated processes, exclusionary and inclusionary, both of which exist within power relationships. A key distinction, though, between these processes is how that power is used within the relationship and the consequences of these power relationships for individuals. Exclusionary othering often uses power within relationships for domination and subordination, with the potential consequence being alienation, marginalization, decreased opportunities, internalized oppression, and exclusion. Exclusionary othering is often influenced by the visibility of one's otherness, and this includes such personal characteristics as skin color, accent, language, physical abilities, and gender. I contend that it is these stigmatizing features that are immediately apparent and constructs one's identity as other. In the U.S., fixed categories of race, ethnicity, gender, class, and sexual orientation often define perceived differences. Inclusionary othering, on the other hand, attempts to utilize power within relationships for transformation and coalition building. Potential consequences of this form of othering are consciousness raising, sense of community, shared power, and inclusion. Inclusionary othering strategies include role taking, reconceptualizing meanings and understandings, and connecting as allies. Within the othering framework, I propose that these strategies can lead to transformations in sociopolitical, economic, structural, and environmental conditions that limit or prevent other persons from realizing societal benefits. Although the framework provides guidance for transforming embedded structural inequalities and creating more socially just conditions, specific approaches for wielding such transformative power often remain elusive in the day-to-day lives of nurses. How is it that nursing history is replete with role models who engage in social justice work, yet today we often find ourselves lacking the commitment to change that fortified our foremothers? A brief foray into nursing history suggests that acts of social justice were connected to and committed on behalf of local communities, while today's nurses often distance themselves from those perceived as different, which simultaneously serves to protect nurses from witnessing the suffering of others. And those of you who were at the opening session where Cornell West spoke, he stated that rather than distancing ourselves, we must allow suffering to speak for transformation to occur. I found those words to be very, very powerful. The call to act in socially just ways has been a tenet of the nursing profession since the days of Lillian Wald, Lavinia Dock, and Margaret Sanger. Progressive nurse reformers who encountered similar issues related to difference as many nurses encounter today. According to Beckemeyer and Butterfield, these three nurses, quote, grew indignant from witnessing the destructive health outcomes of institutionalized poverty and of gender and ethnic inequalities. These nurses harnessed their indignation to work toward the creation of progressive health policies. Other nurses of this period were called to act because of what they witnessed in their practice. For example, Emma Goldman, a nurse who is more well known for her anarchist beliefs and actions rather than her nursing, found, though, that it was her nursing and midwifery practice that grounded her in the day-to-day struggles of the impoverished and laboring classes, the very people her work, her political work was directed toward helping. In her biography, Goldman stated, quote, "Nursing brought me face to face with the living conditions of the workers. Their squalid surroundings, the dull and inert submission to their lot, made me realize the colossal work yet to be done to bring about the change our movement was struggling to achieve." So I raise the question of why it is today, with widening gaps in the U.S. between rich and poor, increasing U.S. poverty rates, and increasing health disparities among racial and ethnic U.S. minorities, that the nursing profession is not visibly indignant and working towards the creation of progressive health policies that will change the status quo and address existing inequities. What is needed for individual nurses and the profession as a whole to become indignant to the point that substantive change in the conditions which construct the lives of others occurs? I contend that it is the desire to care for others and the desire to treat them justly both spring from a compelling sense of human solidarity. Yet by focusing on the other as different from self and separate from the world of the nurse, the other is often framed in exclusionary ways. By separating the other into distinct, quote, cultural groups, which are acontextualized from the political, social, and economic conditions which influence their lives, the nurse can provide neutral care, care that is limited to the nurse-patient relationship and ends when the shift is over or the day is done. These constructions of difference have the consequence of situating the nurse outside of and apart from patients, communities, and society's needs, and subsequently distances nurses from any commitment or role in changing existing injustices. Patients and clients, their communities, and society as a whole end up suffering alone and without the care of the nurse. These acontextual understandings of, quote, different patients supports blaming patients for behaviors the nurse deems unhealthy, such as medication noncompliance, lack of self-control over foods eaten or alcohol consumed or drugs ingested or cigarettes smoked, or simply a lack of motivation to care for self. When blame for poor health is directed toward and situated with patients' individual behaviors, rather than recognizing the broader social determinants of health that strongly influence and in many situations decide how patients can behave, nurses further distance themselves from patients' lives and weaken the bonds of human solidarity. So what are the consequences then of when we have neutral care rather than an invested, socially just care? These patients become labeled as non-compliant, the problem is situated on the shoulders of the other, and their differences then are blamed. Consequently, the role of the nurse or nursing's understandings of difference are rarely interrogated as contributing to the problem. The Code of Ethics for Nurses suggests that as members of the profession, all nurses are expected to care for everyone and to treat all persons justly. Example from the nursing literature suggests, however, that such just and caring actions are not consistently applied. In reality, for those perceived as different, as other, treatment may in fact be harmful or even life-threatening. And so what I'd like to do is share with you some specific examples that I have identified from the literature. I don't have time to go into all of those that I found, but I just wanted to highlight a few that I think really illustrate the points that I'm trying to make. Fulford and Ford Gilbo conducted a study with a convenient sample of 63 adolescent single mothers who were recruited from urban and rural communities in southwestern Ontario, Canada. Half of the participants reported that stigma affected their emotional or mental health by increasing their feelings of stress or depression and eroding their self-confidence. And I think from this quote, you can see that the nurse had a role in that. Like, my emotions went up and down. I was really down because of the looks that you got and the things the nurses would say, things that made you feel you were less than everybody else. Ron Dahl conducted a study on lesbian and gay men's narratives about attitudes in nursing. Some of the informants linked negative attitudes from nursing staff with homosexuality. I was pointed to a chair outside the door where I was to sit. It was unbelievably condescending when they said that I should understand that it was absolutely forbidden for relatives to go in there, in part because of the spread of infection, but also because women who have just undergone surgery are super sensitive and shouldn't be bothered in any way. But as it turned out, new mothers were allowed to have their husbands there. This is a 04 study, and that was a woman participant who was 30 years old. Nels conducted several studies with women with borderline personality disorder, and she interviewed the women as well as the clinicians who cared for them, which included some mental health nurses. And I think this quote also conveys from the nurse's perspective how challenging this work can be. It, our practice, smacks of underlying enmity and antagonism that is real. I'm convinced that on some level I am subconsciously irritated about the fact that 4 hours of time are spent helping this group, and she's referring to the women with borderline personality disorder, of people who are like, gimme, gimme, gimme. And then the last example that I have is from Brown and Fisk. They interviewed First Nations women about their encounters with mainstream healthcare services. They interviewed 10 women from a rural reserve community. And I think this quote also highlights some of the issues that this population experiences. It seemed like any time I go to a doctor, I would have to be well-dressed. I have to be on my best behavior and talking, and I have to sound educated to get any kind of respect. Why do I have to try harder to get any kind of respect? And this quote, I think, is really illustrative of a lot of the work that I have been doing over the last 8 years with Native women, and then more recently with Native communities, and that feeling that being different is bad, it's wrong, and that you are treated differently because of those visible features. So in conclusion, othering exists within broader realities that strongly influence nurses' perspectives and understandings of the other, including educational, political, and communication discourses. In the next presentation, Kathleen will highlight one example of a very strong discourse that frames the others in primarily exclusionary ways, the media. Thank you.